from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in Oakland, I'm Michael Krasny, and we are live from the Oakland Museum of California. This is Forum, and in our opening hour this morning, as part of our Boomtown series, we're going to discuss the changes presently going on in Oakland and focus our attention on the city's future. We'll talk with a panel, including Mayor Libby Schaff, about concerns over gentrification and public safety, development versus displacement, the cost of housing and renting, job availability, and what some are calling the new culture of money. And we'll follow that up with an hour devoted to the growing arts movement and the exhibit presently showing here at the Oakland Museum of California titled, Who's Oakland? Forum is next. Join us for all that lies ahead after this. Well, from KQED Public Radio in Oakland, and we are in Oakland today at the Oakland Museum of California with a live audience. Thank you for that. I'm Michael Krasny, and I'm delighted to be here. And we're going to talk about the arts in Oakland in this hour and some of certainly the challenges that we spoke about in the last hour vis-a-vis housing and the like will be brought up. It's getting tougher for artists, as you can imagine, with these higher rents and with the cost of housing. We have a number of artists with us and people who are certainly very involved in the arts. And Oakland is really known for a vibrant art scene. Its monthly Art Murmur event, the lively gallery walk and street party. But the city has also experienced, as we said in the last hour, the second highest rent increases in the country. And as part of our Boomtown series, we're going to talk with members of the local arts community, not only about the impact they're seeing economically, also artistically and beyond. And they join us for this live broadcast. Let me tell you who we have with us, and we're delighted to welcome Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson actually has an exhibit here. I should say that when you go into the exhibit, you see almost the first thing what Chris put forward here, which is a dartboard. We'll talk about this. That's a little tease. Chris is featured in KQED Arts video on the work he's contributed to the museum's Who is Oakland exhibit and about his artistic process. You can watch that video, by the way, on our website, kqed.org/forum. He's a photographer. His work is part of the whole Oakland exhibit, which is currently on display. And welcome, Chris. Good to have you.
Great to be here.
Anika Barber is also with us. She's the owner of the Betty Ono Gallery. She's also an artist raised in Oakland, a founder and organizing committee member of the Artivists. That's a grassroots group that aims to create policies to improve equity in the arts and among low-income communities of color, and we welcome you.
Thank you.
We also have on this morning's panel Christy Johnson-Lehman, and she is executive director of Destiny Arts Center, an Oakland nonprofit that teaches youth nonviolence through the arts. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Sarah Sexton, also with us this morning, founder of Oakland Indie Mayhem Productions. It's a company that books music shows, street festivals, music crawls, other venues around Oakland, and she also co-owns a record label with the same name. And welcome. Good morning. I want to make sure I have your name right. Christy Johnson Lehman. We'll give it the Gallic French, yes?
Yes.
That's what you prefer? Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to botch it. That's what we have producers for. Okay, among many other things. Let me begin with Chris Johnson. And Chris, you came to Oakland, I believe, in the mid-'80s and really fell in love with Oakland. Let's talk about that first, the love affair with Oakland and how it began.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a real love affair. I came to California in 1967. And lived in San Francisco and had the normal impressions of Oakland as a place that was nice over there. And I worked over here. I had a job at the California College of Arts and Crafts, as it was called then. And so I would commute through the city. But when I finally got a chance to move here, I realized that it's an amazing place. There are probably more artists per square mile here than any place else in the country. And that's a wonderful thing. And there are a lot of good reasons for that. So, yeah, I'm a real booster for Oakland.
A lot of them refugees from San Francisco.
That's true.
And we'll talk about certainly the challenges that they face living here. But I got to give you your props. I mean, you work with Ansel Adams. You're a close friend of Imogene Cunningham, and you've certainly risen in the ranks in terms of a very competitive field, photography.
Well, I'm a very lucky man. I really appreciate the opportunities that California has offered me. And, yeah, I've had a chance to work with some amazing people.
And you've worked in public art, the Oakland Terminal, the Oakland Airport?
That's true, yeah. There was a turning point in my life when I had a chance to work with Suzanne Lacy. We created a project that maybe people may remember. It was called The Roof is on Fire. And that was a big turning point for me because I realized that it was an opportunity to sort of use creative practices as a way to affect social issues. And so I've been sort of in the realm of engaged art since then.
Also, former president of the City Camera, California Camera Art Gallery, and also a teacher at California Institute of the Arts.
Yeah, for a while I was president of SF Camera Work and chair of the Art Commission here, so I've done a lot of different things.
Yeah, you've got a lot of impressive bona fides, but talk about this concern that we're expressing here today and that we're focusing on to a great degree because you're so involved with artists, not only photographers, but artists throughout this community. And that is the difficulty they're having in terms of affordable housing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's understood sort of broadly that artists are what make a place culturally exciting, that makes it a destination. And we think of places like Oakland as the place where you can find affordable spaces to live and work. Unfortunately, my students are really struggling to find a way to live here. What we don't want to happen is that Oakland becomes sort of like North Beach or the Left Bank, a place that used to be a nurturing place for artists, but now they can't afford to live here.
Well, is the arts community rising up as a result of this? What are they doing in a grassroots sense?
Well, I think it really depends on where you are in sort of the scale. If you're an established artist and have a studio here, own a home here, then I think you're benefiting from the rise in property values. But if you're a student, if you're an emerging artist, if you need large spaces to work, it's really difficult to find those spaces. I think I'm optimistic. I mean, Oakland is a large community. The synergies between different communities create opportunities for artists to find spaces to live, and we're creative, so we figure those things out, but it's increasingly difficult.
What makes you optimistic?
Well, I think, luckily, Oakland is not going to be a place that can ever be homogeneous. I mean, there's so many different cultures here, and I think the clashes of those cultures...
It's that secret soup that the mayor was talking about?
Yeah, it's a mixture of a lot of different cultural textures. And what happens is when you get different ethnic groups and different social groups and lifestyles coming together, they create opportunities for artists to find spaces. And I'm continuing to believe that that's going to continue to happen.
Well, Michael Nelson and Chestine Hodge Nelson have raised their children and grandchildren in East Oakland for over 25 years. Here's an interview that Chris Johnson did. And I talked about the dartboard up there. Actually, what Chris has is a whole spread out. And you actually did have darts. You shot a dart, and wherever it landed, you interviewed people from those areas?
Yeah, what we did was I created a map that was exclusively of the areas of Oakland that are considered to be the bad neighborhoods. So I created my own vision of those neighborhoods, and I threw darts at it. And it was based on the assumption that I think all of us understand, and that is that if you talk to everyday people anywhere, you find wonderful people who love their children and are trying to support their families. So it didn't seem like a bad bet that if I created a kind of random system of selecting those people and knocked on their doors, I would find remarkable people, and that's what happened.
Well, we're going to hear part of that presentation in this interview, and it's part of an exhibit here at the museum, the Oakland Museum of California, called Who is Oakland? And these folks, Chestine Hodge Nelson and Michael Nelson, reminisce about how wholesome the neighborhood used to be.
This block here is cool. I mean, I cut the neighbor's grass. We go down and pick up trash. And I do what I can, pick up paper. And we all know one another, look out for one another and stuff.
That's what we need to get back to.
This block is cool. And you got to go from this block to that block to that block. You know what I mean? And that's how we get our neighborhoods back.
But that's how we was raised.
That's how we were raised. I mean,
we didn't lock doors. Everybody came to your house. We sang. We ate at everybody's house. Everybody, your parent got your child if their child was doing wrong. It wasn't no separation. Everybody, until we get that back, ain't nothing happening. It can happen. It can happen. People got to decide what they want to do.
And let me add that not only Chris's work, but this whole exhibit is really worth seeing. I'll put a plug in for it. I actually went through it this morning and had a grand tour, thanks to the people here for doing that. And I took off some lines from one of the exhibit that were written by Adia Millett, who said, "Today we are all around you. We are loud, lively, and sometimes loyal. We are the villains, the deities, the tricksters, and the shapeshifters. We are Oakland." Okay. I want to go to another of our panelists, and let me also remind you that the exhibit is here, and it will be here for how long, Chris?
Until July 12th.
Till July 12th. So please try to make an effort to come and see it. I want to follow this up, actually, with one more audio clip before we go to other members of the panel here. This is Julian Soto, who's retired and living in East Oakland, and he and his wife maintain a home for their kids and their grandkids. This is another one of Chris Johnson's interviews for the exhibit. And this, well, Julian Soto talks about his neighborhood.
It's great. I mean, it has its problems up and down that way, but overall, it's where my heart is at. I mean, I was born here. My dad worked two jobs to buy this house in 1955. In them days, there was a lot of Mexicans, as you say, around here. You know, it's predominantly Italians, Portuguese, white people. The neighbors here are all really good. Everybody sticks together. There's a problem in front of somebody's house, they call each other. We stick together no matter what race, nationality, religion you are. We're all like one big family around here. But, I mean, if you want a problem, they got them around here, but not on this block.
Well, let me go next to Barbara, who's here right next to me on my left. Where people are seated has nothing necessarily to do with their politics. I just wanted to get that on the record here. You actually were raised in Oakland. You've been an activist in Oakland. You've been a major part of the art scene here in Oakland. Talk about neighborhood change from your perspective, what you've seen.
Well, yes, thank you. I make a joke sometimes that I was born on Broadway. I know that sounds a little sketchy, but the truth is I'm like a third generation born in Kaiser Hospital here. So when I say that with pride. And I have lived all over the city of Oakland from Lake Merritt, attending the former Lakeview Elementary School, walking under that underpass in the early 1980s and seeing that amazing mural that depicted what culture and life and vitality meant here in Oakland and East Oakland as well. So I've seen a lot of aspects of the city that we've talked about earlier today in this conversation. My space, Betty Ono, is a center for art, culture, and community, and it's in downtown Oakland. And I'm very proud to have participated in the revitalization of the downtown district, along with other folks like Joyce Gordon, who's been there for a long time. So when I think about Oakland, I think about the whole of Oakland from north to east to west. And I think about the pride that comes from growing up in those various communities and how we're all interlinked. I really, really believe that our cultural equity and the vitality of the city is going to come from all points and really all cultures and all intersections. And I'm really championing that in my space. And we partner up with folks from all over the city in terms of the neighborhood. So it's really important to have a core, but to really see how we all are connected and how we're all impacted by one another across the city.
And your space that you alluded to is at 18th and Telegraph, I understand. But also, you were in Atlanta for a while. So you came here back, let me see if I have this right, came back in 2007 and were really struck by, almost galvanized by that feeling of something having changed in terms of inclusiveness, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Our space is at 14th and Broadway.
14th, I'm sorry.
We did start at 18th and Telegraph in a formerly vacant, blighted building owned by a private property owner. And so Betty Ono is a reflection of, you know, this idea of taking something and taking something from nothing, just really transforming what might have been considered a problem by bringing our collective resources and energy together. I did move away to Atlanta to study. I went to a historically black college and university, Clark Atlanta University, very proud of that. Was gone for 10 years, and when I did come back, I was alarmed. I was shocked to find so many of my former neighbors, community members, family members, church members, not here anymore. And I was also surprised to experience this kind of real deep-seated, you know, pain that comes from that, that comes from displacement, that comes from having to leave where you're from to survive. And that was reflected in the conversations I was having with community members, artists, activists, cultural workers, educators, folks working across sectors. And so that did galvanize me as I attended Oakland Art Murmur originally back in 07 as a patron, and not really seeing a reflection of my experience as a person born and raised here, not necessarily seeing the full kind of spectrum of the community that could be represented in the arts. And I was inspired to do something about that.
Well, you've got a whole cultural plan for the city, which we can talk about perhaps, yes, time permitting. But I suppose it's available online, and maybe you can give out the website before the hour's over. But
sure.
I want to talk a little bit with you before we go on to the other members of the panel about the problems now in terms of housing and just artists finding places to work, finding studios, finding any kind of place to work.
That's a loaded point. I mean, when we think about artists, sometimes we don't see them as people that are your neighbors, that are your sisters, your brothers, your community members. And yes, there is a real challenge around affordable housing across the community, and artists are a part of that as well. When we think about our artist groups or collectives, grassroots or organized nonprofits and institutions, you're also finding that same issue in commercial spaces. Spaces like Betty Ono, where we're having to face 30% rent increases, 70% rent increases, being forced out of our long-term spaces. Groups that have been in downtown, uptown, east, west, 10 years, 15 years, finding that they have to move. They have to immediately, like, transport music equipment, you know, transport classes, try to find a place. And that is really, really a challenge right now. San Francisco Business Times recently put out an article saying that we can expect a 5.9% increase in, like, commercial spaces and office spaces up, you know, over the next couple of years. And if we're talking about that every single year, we're moving from 20% to 30% to 40%. And the same issue around rental housing is affecting organizations and artist groups.
Let me bring Sarah Sexton into this, because Sarah Sexton is very involved in the music scene and music venues, and really takes a great deal of pride in participating in it on so many levels. But you're seeing pretty much the same things that you're hearing here, aren't you, from among artists, musicians and other artists that you come in contact with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can speak for myself to say that I've lived in West Oakland for almost 5 years, and I'm not moving anytime soon because I have a landlord who is very in love with the art scene here, very much respects what I and so many folks like Anika are doing for the community. And so she has really done what she can in her power to keep from raising the rent on me. But I'm very blessed in that situation because...
You're blessed, but the prices around you are skyrocketing.
The prices around me are skyrocketing. Just in the last 6 months, roughly, I've seen about 4 houses on just my block be sold. And families living there in the entire time that I've been there move out, and who's to say which of them are selling versus which of them are being pushed out? I can't claim to that, but I can say the landscape of my neighborhood has changed dramatically in the time that I have lived there, and it's getting more and more difficult to find anywhere that's reasonably priced.
Since you mentioned difficulty, I want to talk about the work you do. It's difficult sometimes for you because you're a white woman, bringing all these different groups together and making sure that, you know, you cover all the bases where the diverse population is concerned?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you asked that question because it's something that has been a really big focus point for me, is that there is a very fine balance between wanting to show a diverse range of the community, which is very diverse. There's all different genres of musicians here and styles of music from all over the world. But the fine balance comes from showing that diversity, but also not claiming to represent all of that diversity. I think it's really important to acknowledge where your strengths are and where strengths are in other parts of the community. So for myself, I really try to do my part to reach out to folks that have for a long time been in this community and that represent different diversities, whether that's folks that are doing Balkan music from the eastern part of the world or folks that are interested in Afro pop, folks that are interested in Latin and cumbia. There are so many different folks around here from different cultures that it's important to want to experience all of those different styles and cultures and music. But also not to claim that, hey, I know what the hip hop community wants to always listen to. I know what the folks from the Latin community want to hear. I feel like most of the time I need to go into those communities and find someone who is deeply rooted in it the way that I am deeply rooted in more so indie rock and more so folk music and Americana in order to hear what those folks want to be hearing.
Again, Sarah Sexton here with us is the founder of Oaktown Indie Mayhem Productions, and that's a company that books music shows. She also co-owns a record label with the same name. We also have Christy Johnson-Lamone with us, who's executive director of Destiny Arts Center, an Oakland nonprofit that teaches youth nonviolence through the arts. Nonprofit money harder to come by now than it ever has been, or... Actually, is it easier now that we're out of the recession?
It's a mixed bag, actually. What I'm finding is the biggest successes we're having in fundraising are around our facility and our cultural facility, which during the height of the recession, we were in a capital campaign and really had to be really clear about our value proposition, being one of the only cultural preservation and culture-making facilities in North Oakland. And that's changing, which is really, I think, a testament to the power of arts organizing and the power of the word.
Well, I'm reading about those who are very involved in the art community, like you, some of them at least, talking about the outsiders coming in. In fact, there were even some things thrown at people. They're getting the grant money. We've been here longer. We're like indigenous people. We should be getting the grant money.
Well, Destiny Arts Center has been around 26 years, and so we're part of that history, I think, of the arts really transforming communities and really engaging a broad cross-section of people, whether you've been here for three generations or, like myself, we're priced out of San Francisco during the first dot-com boom and have since transplanted over here.
Do you see a lot of carpetbagging, for lack of a better word?
Well, I don't know that I would call it that. We are seeing a lot of folks who are similar to myself being priced out of San Francisco. And we're not just talking about a regional issue. This is an international issue. And so one of the reasons why I was really excited about talking about this today is I think that there are some solutions being piloted all over the country and across the pond, so to speak, to address some of this preservation of cultural spaces and cultural communities so that we can start to stem the tide a little bit.
And real quick, because we're coming up on a break, you're seeing a lot of your artists that you come in contact with also priced out.
Completely.
And displaced. Yeah.
Completely. And that really impacts our artist community, of course.
Okay. I want to get you, our listeners, involved in this, and listeners in the theater here, if you have something you'd like to contribute to the conversation, if you have a question or comment, raise your hand and we will go to you. But in the meantime, those of you listening can also come to us. Our toll-free number is available and we welcome your calls. The number is 866-733-6786. Please feel free to call us now if you'd like to join the program talking about Oakland and the arts and artists trying to live in Oakland and work in Oakland. Again, our number, 866-733-6786. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we are broadcasting live this morning from the Oakland Museum and the Oakland Museum of California with a live studio audience. Thank you for that, and we're going to go to your calls, and we'll do that forthwith. Also, those of you who have questions who are in the audience, just raise your hand, and Amanda or Tina will go to you, and we'll get you involved in this as well. I want to push back a little bit with an important question, and Anika or Sarah, well, or for that matter, Chris or Christy may want to jump in here. It's a question about why the arts should be a priority. It's always sort of a practical-minded question. There are terrible needs in Oakland, and so the question comes down to why prioritize the arts or why make the arts, an important part of where funding can be in a city that's $30 million in debt when there are so many needs out there, so many impoverished people and people needing help.
Sure.
Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd love to jump in on that. Because, you know, when we think about what are the concepts that define how we belong to each other, we usually use, like, citizen, consumer, but also culture. And when we say, so what is culture? I mean, culture is the way that we express ourselves. It's the atmosphere that we share and we breathe. And artists are the ones who generate that. So I think when you're looking for ways to define what clarifies who we are as people in a given place, you have to look to the artists.
Yeah, Nika?
I mean, I would definitely agree with that. And also just like to add that when I think of art, it's not a standalone, you know, just this thing that you do. Artists are not just generating culture. People are generating culture. What the food you eat, where you live, how you live, the clothes you wear is all a reflection of your culture, the values that you have, how they show up, and your politic is part of your culture. And I think that it's core. Arts, culture, community go hand in hand in my book, and that's how I've approached the work that we've done. And I just really see artistic practice, creative practice, especially in low-income immigrant communities of color, marginalized communities, really as a point of survival. We're not talking about art just as expression. We're talking about creativity as survival. We're talking about it as a tool. We're talking about it as education and learning. We're talking about it as healing. And especially in this climate that we're in right now, when we look at, you know, really, really huge issues of police brutality, racial inequality, economic injustice, housing injustice, all of those things, artists, creativity, culture is all interlinked in that. It's intersectional.
You see synergy between all of
them. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I could build on that, Michael.
Yeah, Chrissy, I'd like you to build on that. Also, since you mentioned education, I mean, you and your organization are all behind teaching artists and having artists teach. And we know now, I mean, we've actually had a great deal of data on this, that students do better when they study the arts and when they're allowed to express themselves in the arts. They do better in every subject, period.
Yes, I think I'm a testament to that, being a child of theater and drama and dance in public school, when that was something that was afforded to us as public school students and not something that PTA had to raise money to do. Right? Remember those days? I'd like to talk about the creative economy just for a moment, because yeah. I think the business people listening to this have already tuned out. The arts, okay, great. My kid needs to learn computer science and how to code. And guess what? Those are all part of creative economy jobs. $15 billion generated. There's a report that just came out in 2014 that talks about the impacts, the economic impacts of the creative economy in California and how that is what is driving this huge boom that we're seeing in the Bay Area. So you can say that we're victims of our own success. I think the key is going to be to link that increased wealth and increased gap, right, the equity gap that we've been talking about. How do we close that? I think it is largely through creative arts education and really starting to include arts in STEM and make it STEAM.
And I don't like to I don't like to push the San Francisco-Oakland rivalry to any degree, because it already exists, I think. It's almost like the Dodgers and the Giants in some ways, if you accept that metaphor. But the truth of the matter is, San Francisco has a displacement fund for artists.
That is right. It's called CAST.
Yeah. Want to add something, Sarah?
Yeah, I would love to kind of bring together what all of these folks have said in a way, and that's that, touching on what each of them have said, the arts are all around you. The chairs that you're sitting in were designed by someone. And so, yeah, there's that dividing line of what is the high money market artists and what are the like fine artists. So it's important to keep that in mind. However, I'd also like to touch on the fact that Oakland is historically a place for social agitation, if you will, political agitation. And like Anika was saying here, art is such, it's so important for expressing ourselves in terms of the hardships that we've gone through, the social issues that we are combating with racism, with classism, with everything. And I truly believe that although I'm not a big fan of Art Merber anymore, for those of you who have lived here a long time, it's changed a lot. However, I truly believe that the artists here in Oakland expressing themselves and getting that artwork out into the streets and helping create things like Art Merber has really kickstarted our economy and this sense of people outside of Oakland feeling safe to go into Oakland, which has really changed things a lot. I think that having music out in the streets, having art out in the streets, does dramatic things for making people feel comfortable to be walking around, to be spending their money, and to be going out at night.
Maybe kind of sublimation for some Occupy folks, too? Is that what you're implying? Yeah.
I guess you could say that.
Well, we've got a caller on the line here who wants to talk about Art Murmur, which you mentioned. We'll find out maybe why it's declined in your eyes, but let's hear from Conrad. Conrad, go ahead.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
And everyone. My name is Conrad Myers. I'm the president of the board of the Oakland Art Murmur. And I guess the most important thing I want to say is that it is, in fact, separate from the First Friday Festival. The Oakland Art Murmur did start in 2005 as a loose grouping of galleries in order to conduct the First Friday openings. But since then, it's become separate from the festival and has grown to 45 member galleries and affiliate retail spaces spread all over Oakland. Our programs and locations now go well beyond the First Friday in Uptown, and the gallery spaces are open every Saturday afternoon. We have monthly guided art walks, educational symposiums, and family programs supporting art throughout the whole city. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization funded by several Oakland community benefit districts, as well as the San Francisco Foundation.
All right, that's a really good plug, but let me hear from Sarah Sexton. I want to hear what Sarah's concerns are, because since you're a part of the brass of Art Murmur, maybe you can address them.
Well, you know, I support any sort of creative endeavor, but the bottom line is that I walked away from Art Murmur, from First Fridays, when the galleries that I worked with in that kind of 23rd to 27th on Telegraph Street area started telling me that their sales had cut in half when the city decided to close down the street, because it kept people in this essentially kind of this vendor pen. Rather than really pushing them and encouraging them to go into the galleries. And I specifically heard that from gallery owners in those areas who had seen, like, numbers don't lie. And this was about maybe 2 years ago, I might be a little off in my timeline, but essentially when the city took over, they closed off that street, and it changed. It went from it being a very specific art crawl where from what I know of the galleries I was working with, people were buying art to becoming a street party.
All right. Now, this is what's often called the culture of money, I think, is what you're directing your comments at. And Conrad, how do you reply?
Well, I think that we moved away from the street festival when that happened as well. I mean, it had become a very complex thing when the city began to take it over. And that was when the decision was made to, if we're really going to consider ourselves the Oakland Art Murmur, we need to include every gallery in Oakland, anybody that's showing work, and support both Oakland and the Oakland Art Murmur and turning it into a cultural equity institution rather than just this street festival. I think if you talk to those same galleries now, they'd say that the Saturday stroll is where they're making most of their sales.
Annika, back into this. Annika, you want to talk about the way that you think the walks, the art walks, can best help the city and its artists?
Yes, Annika, my dear, Annika.
Annika.
Yes. Now, I've seen all sides of
Annika,
it.
Annika, so.
That's, it's a similar name.
Pardon?
Similar name, little different connotation.
Annika,
here.
Yeah.
But I hear what Sarah is saying, and I also, I mean, Betty Ono is a member of Oakland Art Murmur. Let's be very, very clear. We are a member of the Institution of Galleries or the Organization of Galleries. I was very excited when a former executive director of Oakland Art Murmur championed expanding it across the city, because we know that arts and creativity and creative culture is across the city. And so you now have an Oakland Art Murmur that represents Far East, Far West, North, Downtown, Uptown, all of it. I do think that there was an impact on those galleries when the street closure happened. But Betty Ono was instrumental in helping to actually bring more folks down the street, down the block, when we first opened up at 18th and Telegraph. And at that time, we had street performances. We really leveraged our connections in community to present arts that was really reflective of a larger cultural group, so very multicultural, and we're continuing to do that. We actually make sales, you know, consistently. I'm very proud of that. We are at a space that's about accessibility, affordability, and participation, so it's really turning the head a bit around this traditional commercial gallery model because we like to make sure that we're really being inclusive.
But you're putting food on the table.
Yeah, we're putting food on the table, and really, you know, individual artists are small micro enterprises. So Betty Ono is really a social enterprise. It's a creative social enterprise. It's not necessarily about being for profit, but creating profit, generating income, generating economic opportunities that is felt at Awaken, felt at the beautiful, wonderful bars that are now opening up. You know, it's felt across the city, and we're part of bringing that together. Saturday Stroll is amazing because it's more focused. People come with the intention of really understanding who the artists are, getting to talk to the curators, getting to meet the people behind the galleries and the spaces. And that's been wonderful. People do come from South Africa, Belgium, Latin America, San Francisco. We get a ton of people, and we're happy. Betty Ono is happy to be an anchor in downtown for that.
And Anika Barber is the owner of Betty Ono Gallery, yes. Also an artist raised in Oakland and founder and organizing committee member of the Artivists. They're local artists and activists who are committed to improving life for the artists in Oakland. Please,
yeah.
Chris. It's Chris Johnson.
Yeah, it's fascinating to hear, you know, this conversation about Art Murmur and the emergence of that phenomena as an organized way to deliver culture since the boom. But those of us that have been in Oakland for a long time know that there's a whole other tier that really has supported the artists over the generations. You think about the open studios that Pro Arts. I mean, the way a lot of us understand the neighborhoods and the working practices of artists have been through those open studios. There are organizations like Creative Growth that have always been there serving a constituency. There are amazing coalitions like the Eastside Art Alliance that have been there. There's the Attitudinal Healing Center. I could just keep going on and on. There are a lot of people in the audience that are nodding their heads because that has been sort of the background bedrock of the way culture and artist practice has been supporting itself before the phenomena of Art Murmur came along and filled that space. And then there are organizations like the Crucible that moved to Oakland because they understood that it was a vital place to do the kind of work that they do. And then there are activists like Wendy Levy who are coming here and doing projects, working with the city to do things. So it's been a vital place to work on, even during the times when there wasn't the kind of support that's coming through organizations like Art Murmur.
There's still the problems, of course, finding workspace, housing, and affordability, especially, that we've talked about. And we have in our audience a young man named Trevor. Trevor, where are you? Just maybe
right here.
There you are, right, yeah. Up in front. Okay. Well, you are at least doing something that may be a way of compromising, providing some sense of reducing the problem. Let's talk about this. The idea is togetherness. Artists with technology people living together. And how does that work exactly?
Sure. So thanks, Michael. The concept behind Oakstop is something that most of us are familiar with now is co-working. And we've all heard about co-working, and the idea is essentially, you know, professional togetherness, you know, when you break that down. And really what we're focused on is artists as entrepreneurs, you know, and not necessarily thinking about a space for artist studios, but actually the business of art. And that's taking it outside of just the production and the painting and the canvas and actually thinking, how can these artists then actually propel themselves as entrepreneurs that goes beyond just selling a painting? You know, how can they actually align themselves with maybe another tech company and actually become part of this creative economy and further what they're doing with an entrepreneurial lens? And so we're creating space where artists can not only have studio space, but also have workspace, space to bring a laptop, space to bring a client, space to even have a larger event where they might be pitching to people on their latest enterprise, and at the same time be interwoven with people that are working in tech, education, nonprofit. We have people that are working in environmental fields, waste management. And the idea is that any entrepreneur, as we all know, any entrepreneur is also sometimes considered a renaissance person or a hybrid thinker or somebody who's able to work interdisciplinary. And we feel like artists should be doing the same thing as well. And we also wanted to create a space that's going to be right in the middle of downtown Oakland as we look at this big boom. And Oakstop, for me, came from firsthand experience I had actually working in commercial real estate development right in downtown Oakland, working on the Sears building, and looking at that as a primary strategic piece of land to acquire to figure out how the future of Oakland is going to be shaped. And the developer that I was working with at the time was a black developer that was focused on leveraging the Sears building as an arts and retail complex.
Yeah, and you're talking about some real bringing together of art and commerce along with community activism again, right? Yeah,
right.
Christy?
To just build on that concept, we see some examples of that right now in the United States, where in Minneapolis, for example, you have developers who are coming into cultural districts that have a real connection to the neighborhood and a connection to the community. And this one group of developers are now the godfathers or godparents, so to speak, of the arts community, in that they built affordable space, 1 million square feet of art space in a community that has really just transformed and stabilized that area. And I think there are examples like that all over the country where you have now social enterprise and the artist community really talking about how do we build something that's a little bit different so that we don't end up with any town USA.
And let me remind you that Christy Johnson-Lamone is executive director of the Destiny Arts Center, and the young man who's speaking is Trevor Parham, who is an activist and co-founder of Oakstop. That's a shared business space for a mix of Oakland artists and tech startups. Where is it exactly in Oakland?
We're right at 17th and Broadway, Michael, and I'm the only founder.
Okay, just go by on my sheet. You got so many roles that maybe they thought they would bring those roles together, just like you're bringing commerce and art together. Thank you so much, Trevor, for telling us about this. We're going to go into the audience for another audience comment. Amanda has the microphone ready, and please state your name and tell us.
Hello, good morning. My name is Leslie Pritchett, and I work with a number of artists here in Oakland who work in the industrial arts. Many of you are probably aware that Oakland is home to a major international movement in the industrial arts, and a lot of the work that is produced here under that category and capacity is work that's a very large scale. Artists were oftentimes drawn to the spaces available in West and East Oakland predominantly because they had specific characteristics that allowed them to build these very large pieces of art. Many of them are not seen in Oakland. They're oftentimes sent in for exhibition and display other places. So there's a lot happening here that some are aware of and others are less aware of, but it's remarkable. It also is an important part of the generation of the creative economy that we've all been talking about. And we're very worried about losing those spaces in East and West Oakland. They're ripe for development. The value per square foot of producing large sculpture can never compete with the high, the value of development and high rents that for residential real estate development. And they're right in the corridor. The industrial arts corridor is exactly where the march of housing opportunity for workers in San Francisco is located. So I wonder if any of you can comment on how perhaps, maybe mostly solutions, how can we partner with developers? How can we've been working with planning and policy people in the city of Oakland who have been responsive, but they're not easy questions to answer.
Well, Sarah Sexton indicated that she has something to say in response to you, Sarah.
Yeah, a couple of things in regards to that. I'm currently looking for a large space to turn into a music venue, which we are seriously devoid of here in Oakland, considering what an amazing musical community we have here. And I have been working with local developers. And, I think there's a very interesting aspect of that that needs to be brought up. One part of it being that there's a lot of developers out there who do want to support folks that are in industrial arts, such as yourself. I had a meeting with one recently, and he brought up the flip side of that. He said, I've helped develop all of these small businesses and a lot of the buildings that I own, but when I walk into them and I see that they're 90% white, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. And I bring that up because a lot of the industrial arts around here, and I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, go to Burning Man. A community which is predominantly white tends to really push out a lot of other communities, and one that I think is terrible on the environment. So I don't think that we need to put too much more effort into a community that there's a lot of funding within. In order to get into spaces. However, if you want to do that, there are developers out there who want to help people develop some of these warehouses and huge lots. But hopefully you'll work with a developer like the one that I was mentioning that is also very aware of the cultural landscape here in Oakland and is respectful to it.
Okay, thank you for
Can
that.
Can I add a little something to that?
Yeah, please add.
So hope is not a strategy. There are strategies that municipalities and state governments have and are taking to start to preserve some of these spaces and provide incentives, tax credits, LIHTC funds, rezoning some of these light industrial areas, what's happening in North Oakland, and the building that we took over in North Oakland, which was, you know, idle for many years, was the source of quite a bit of blight and tons of disinvestment in the neighborhood. We actually were effective in rezoning that so that it could house work, live housing, as well as arts and cultural space, which we now turn around and rent out for pennies on the dollar than what we paid for the space. And our donors help facilitate that. There's also enterprise zones, transit occupancy, tax funds. The mayor talked about a number of different local initiatives she's working on. And if you're at all in Berkeley tonight, there is a meeting about a 1% tax on developer fees that would go towards public arts. And so there are some pieces out there that are currently being worked on. The last one I'll mention is Assembly Bill 189 by Assemblymember Bloom, which is being heard in the Assembly. And that is to create certified cultural districts throughout the state of California that would then be funded through the California Arts Council that would then work to build some of these cultural districts to preserve the arts in our communities.
And again, Chrissy Johnson Lemon from Destiny Arts Center. Anika, I was going to go to you, but let me bring some callers in here. I've been a little neglectful on that score and don't mean to be. Colby, join us. You're on.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
First of all, thank you so much for this program. It's something that's been, it's been a long time coming. Absolutely. I would just like to address, I think make a bridge between the first hour and this hour. I've been in Oakland for over 10 years. And as I look at when that major shift happened, and for me, the evidence of that shift is people out at night, that I think is a very important cultural symbol, sign that a community is thriving. That, for me, was when the Fox Theater opened. I think that the Fox Theater is potentially the best music venue in the Bay Area, and it has drawn a reason for people to come to Oakland for that. Since then, I have watched downtown blossom. There is a reason to go out in downtown Oakland now. And Art Murmur and all of that stuff really exploded at that point, or began to. And the opportunity for that to happen in both West and East Oakland is there. We have this beautiful train station that sits derelict. We have, you know, beautiful buildings in East Oakland that are similar. And so as we, like, make the choice to be the advocate or the instigator of change towards this arts movement, you also have to create an opportunity and incentive for there to be in a community to support it. And for me, affordable housing and artists comes down very much to a zoning issue, a very specific zoning issue, that in San Francisco you have live-work zoning that happens, and then everybody moves in, and there's no artists, there's no work happening there. It's just an excuse to jump through a permitting loophole. And there are so many buildings that have sat derelict for so long in Oakland that if there was some type of rezoning ordinance to support this community, that there, so we could create opportunities. Because I have investigated and tried to find my own space and investigated buildings that have sat vacant for decades that are beautiful, and there's no investment dollars happening for them. And so to me, it is very much an infrastructure issue of how do you facilitate these movements for happening? Because right now it's happening in downtown Oakland. Now is our opportunity to keep the soul of Oakland happening, but also expand it to West and East Oakland. And let that, I mean, I think that is the nature of what Oakland is all about.
Colby, appreciate your comments. Nika, talking about zoning here, and let's talk to you about that in terms of how you foresee things moving forward.
I mean, zoning is definitely an important and critical aspect to this idea of creating space or sustaining space and sustaining communities, planning what's happening with the planning department, what's happening down the road with the city, what developments are kind of being brought into this space. What Sarah raised around who has access and how we define equity is really important. Like, it's, we can talk about zoning, but if we're talking about low-income communities, immigrant communities, communities of color who have historically been underserved, underrepresented, undervalued, under-resourced, how should they or how can they participate in the development process? Don sat right in this seat, and I'm happy that I'm sitting right here because I feel very aligned with what Don brought up around democratizing this process, getting communities more involved, or actually participating and going to communities. This caller just said that, you know, because the Fox Oakland, you know, opened up, you know, downtown has been booming. But I have you know that before the Fox, there was the Black Box Theater. There was the Alice Arts Center, which is now the Malonga Cascalord Center on 14th and Broadway. There have been centers of activity and cultural development going on in Oakland since 1930, 1940. 7th Street, West Oakland was a jazz and blues heritage site. And what's happening there? So there needs to be policies that...
We'll leave it at that. There needs to be policies because you hear the music coming up. We are flat out of time. Let me thank you, Anika Barber. Thank Chris Johnson. Thank Chrissy Johnson-Limon and Sarah Sexton. Thank you, the audience, for your participation. And special thanks to our host, the Oakland Museum of California. Go see the exhibit, Who is Oakland? You Oakland lovers will be not only impressed, but will be certainly moved by it. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg. Additional support for this hour of Forum comes from funding for KQED Arts, provided by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, and the California Arts Council, a state agency, advancing California through the arts and creativity.